This is Jesse McDougall with the Global Business Podcast. Today, I have an incredible guest, Mark Preston with Street Drone. Mark has a long history of working with Formula One companies, having founded the Super Arguri Formula One team in Oxford after working with Arrows Grand Prix and McLaren in the UK, as well as Borland Racing in Australia. He is the automotive advisor to Oxford University's Said Business School. He has a keen interest in vehicle automation, electrification, and leads the Formula E team, TWR Tachida. Today, he joins the Global Business Podcast to discuss Street Drone, a company he founded that provides autonomous, self-driving automotive platforms. Mark digs into the practical state of commercial and private autonomous vehicles. Street Drone has industrial logistics, shuttle, passenger, and last mile delivery vehicles on the road operating globally. Mark gives us his views on electric versus hydrogen vehicles and the next stages in the future of mobility towards fully autonomous solutions. Hello, Mark Preston, and welcome to Global Business Podcast. I'm delighted to have you on here today.
Thank you for having me today.
That's great. I was introduced to you via a friend in the UK who is also part of an innovative automotive ecosystem. And he mentioned that I absolutely must talk to you about Street Drone and possibly some of your other activities in the autonomous and electric vehicle space. So I wanted to maybe start out where you could tell me a little bit about your background and what led you into this area.
Sure. So I'm from Australia, actually. Lived in the UK for now over 25 years. Came over here to do Formula One, actually, in 96. And so I'm an engineer. Come from the simulation and stress analysis part of the world. Engineering side of the world. I came over here, started working at Arrows Grand Prix. Then I went to McLaren Formula One team. Worked there for a few years, which are interesting experience. And then I wanted to start up my own Formula One team. And in the end, we ended up starting Super Aguri Formula One with Aguri Suzuki, a famous Japanese driver, and Honda. So we ran that team for a few years until, sadly, the financial crash in 2008 meant that Honda pulled out of Formula One. At that point, then I started to look at what did I think was the future of my favorite business, which was automotive and racing, and got involved in electric vehicles. I helped to spin out a company called Oxford Yasser Motors from Oxford University, where I'd done my MBA. And that actually got sold to Mercedes a few weeks ago. So that's a success story for the region here in Oxfordshire. And then that sort of led me into how could electric racing, happen. I got involved in some of the early discussions with the FIA about starting what is now Formula Electric back in 2009, I think, 10. That long ago, and then basically got involved in Formula Electric, Formula E, from the beginning, again, as a Aguri, Super Aguri, so with a Japanese connection. And I still do that, basically look after the team, which is now called DS Tachida. It's the most successful team in Formula E. We've won 5 championships, and sadly we only came third last year, but the previous years we'd won everything, but we've got next year, of course. And in parallel, myself and an old friend of mine who'd actually done a paper round 39 years ago, I think it was in Australia, decided that we should do something together. And pretty much we were just looking today. We started Street Drone about 5 years ago. So that's an autonomous vehicle company. We started off providing autonomous vehicles to startups and universities. And now we're just starting to pivot towards what we think is kind of our final focus, which is low speed logistics. We have a very big thing, which we have a big truck, which pulls big trailers around Nissan's Sunderland manufacturing plant, and a very smaller vehicle, which is a last mile delivery vehicle. And we've received investment from a high street store over here in the UK called Wilko. And so it's quite exciting, the future in all areas of, my favorite business of sort of transportation, and now I suppose you could say mobility.
That sounds great. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the technology or the history behind the technology.
Yeah, sure. So the autonomous vehicles, we actually started off when a company asked us, is there such a thing as an autonomous ready vehicle? And we said, well, no, you can't buy them off the shelf, but, you know, we could do one. So we took our knowledge from motorsports with our other co-founder, Ian Murphy, and we created our first product, which we call the Street Drone Twizy, which is a little, they call them L7E vehicles over here, a quadricycle. It's a bit, in some ways, a bit like a golf cart, but it goes faster. So that's a small vehicle that we sell to universities and, I said, startups. So we've got about 25 of those vehicles, including a Nissan van, around the world. We haven't got any in the US yet or Canada, but we have them as far flung as Australia, Hong Kong, Germany, many of them in the UK. So a lot of that technology comes from our experience in motor racing. So we applied all of the kind of learning experiences from motor racing, control systems, electronics, all those elements to making an autonomous ready vehicle, which we're now then creating these last mile delivery vehicles using some open source software from Japan. We started off the back of a project over there called AutoWare, and we've developed that into a stack that gets supplied with our vehicles that you can buy off the shelf. We're actually just trying to figure out how we get the Renault Twizys into the US at the moment.
Well, I'm hopeful that some of our listeners will be creative and think of solutions for you on that front. So that's you good. Are actually, can you name some of your key customers or even key targeted customer bases?
Yeah, so I mean, the probably the most exciting thing that we've got going on at the, in the very near future is the truck, which is what they call terminal tractors. So it's a truck that has like half a cab on the front. You've probably seen them on around. They take the very long semi-trailer that carries containers, and they move them around manufacturing plants. So the big project we've got going on at the moment is up at Nissan's Sunderland plant with partners such as Hitachi, Nokia, and others that are involved in the project, the university's council of Sunderland, and other aspects there. And then on the delivery vehicle side, probably not so famous in America, but Wilco over here is a high street store that I think it's a 90-year-old business. They're in most high streets in the UK. I think there's about 400 stores. So they employ about 25,000 people. So they're our investor, but also end customer in that area. And then, as you can imagine, sky's the limit after you start at places like Nissan and with an actual end customer like Wilco.
Great. It sounds very exciting. So when we talk about autonomous, I think your website mentions level 2, et cetera, but can you kind of talk us through what do we really mean? How autonomous are we talking? And what do we mean by level 2, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah. So level 2, you have to still have a safety driver, which means that there's somebody ready and able to take control of the vehicle. Those vehicles are allowed to run on the roads in the UK as long as they're insured. So we do run those vehicles already in the UK. Level 3 is kind of in the middle, which most people think will probably skip. There are some car companies looking at level 3 because it's a little bit vague as to when the human should be taking over or available to help, because if you know you fall asleep, you're not really available. So it's sort of a bit suspect, that level 3 area. Level 4 is when there is no safety driver, but it's in a very controlled area, very, very known. So the site where we're working up at Nissan, that's very known. We know exactly the site. It's secure. Everyone that's on the site can be trained to interact with the vehicle. We know it back by the back of our hands. It's the vehicle's within a safety zone. That would be the similar if that went onto the roads, like maybe into an area like a new build estate where you're building new houses. That might be a geofenced controlled area, which would be level 4. So that's the area we believe will be the near-term future. And then the one that obviously many people are trying to solve, Waymo and others, is level 5, which is just pick you up anywhere, take you anywhere, do anything in any circumstance. We believe that is a little way off, and most people are saying they're not really sure when that's actually going to happen. So the focus is really, I think, for most people on this level 4 element, where the engineering parameters are very well controlled. In the beginning, we'll just have more controls, and as time goes on, we'll have less controls. So in the beginning, we may have a teleoperation capability where if the vehicle gets to something that's too complicated, it might say to the back to base and say, tell me what to do here. There's something wrong with these traffic lights, or there's something wrong with the situation. Now, we don't think that'll be on a motorway, you know, running down a motorway or a freeway at 100 miles an hour. It'll be in a very, we're focusing on very low speed, what we say 20 miles an hour. So 20 is plenty. I don't know if you've seen just recently, Paris has made all of the streets in Paris less than 20 miles an hour. So it's becoming very, very common here in Europe that city streets, and especially very suburban streets, are going to 20 miles an hour as a maximum. And we think that's a good maximum for slow speed delivery vehicles.
That sounds great. Very interesting. It wouldn't work very well in Houston, I have to say, where I'm located right now, but or people would protest, I would say. With the slow speeds. But very interesting for dense and kind of urban centers, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, you've probably read the stories that I think the average speed in London of a car is now 9 miles an hour. You know, it's just got so slow in London. I mean, I'm from Australia, Sydney, Melbourne, and Melbourne's got those fast moving streets. But actually, you know, when you come off those big corridors in the sort of neighborhood area, the speeds can be quite slow. And it's not a problem if the vehicle says, okay, there's too many cars, I'm just going to stop here for a minute, wait till all the cars go past. So, I think it'll be fine. As you say, the city centers, I don't expect it like in the center of London in the near future, but in a sort of a new build estate where we can define a lot of the parameters of the streets, and we can deliver from a local store to the local community, we think that's the more sort of closer, nearer term target.
Sounds great. So I saw on your website there was mention of live trials going on in London, and I think it might have related to both shuttle and passenger services, which I cannot imagine was simple getting off the ground. Can you tell us a bit about that process and how it's going in London?
Yeah, so SMLL is the test site in London. That is public roads. So we did the first open source public trial in Europe. So we used open source software to do a public trial. We used our Nissan ENV200 van. I don't know if that's well known. Yes, it's well known in New York. You know, there was some of the yellow Nissan vans, I believe. I don't think it took off. So I don't think there's that many of them in New York, but the Nissan van was the basis of that. We've got a number of those vans around the UK doing testing. So yeah, that was an on-road trial. It was successful. It was a very slow speed trial, but the area was actually limited in speed in order for trials to go on. It was interesting. It was part of a government funded project, and we're looking to expand those projects more as time goes on.
Sounds amazing. So I noticed another reference in your materials around drive by wire. What do you mean by drive by wire?
I suppose the other way of saying it is fly by wire. So you know. I'm trying to think what's the best example, but basically your steering wheel is connected directly to the wheel. So, you know, often you're the one doing the putting the inputs in. But if you've got one of those cars that maybe does lane assist or can do automated parking, that is when the drive-by-wire system, so the computer tells the car what to do, and it can steer the wheels, control the throttle. So we add that into vehicles like trucks and other systems. So we can do what we call an overlay system. So if you've got one of these trucks like we have at the moment in our facility, we can put a drive-by-wire system on it to make it able to be controlled by a computer. Some of the more modern cars, like let's say a modern Tesla or something like that, would have one of those built into it already. But many of the vehicles we're looking at, maybe like a tractor or a truck or other things, don't have those systems in them, and especially if we want to retrofit to existing vehicles that might be in the world, we're currently proposing something to a port where they've said we've got all these trucks and we'd like to see how that might work with teleoperation and maybe one day with full automation. What can you do? And we say, okay, have a look at this truck that we're doing at Nissan. We can overlay our system onto your existing truck that can still be driven by the normal operator if necessary. But we can start to look on a program to basically, I suppose, head towards full autonomy at some point in the future. But there's a step-by-step process by adding it into existing vehicles.
Amazing. Okay. Are there any sort of controversies or kind of key misconceptions that you'd want to dispel about the future of this technology? Is there any resistance points?
I think, there's a lot of stories on it, obviously, at the moment about Tesla, isn't there, and their testing of full self-driving or whatever they define as full self-driving on the roads. I mean, we're doing a lot of testing off-road. We're taking a very, very staged process to it. I think by the time our systems are on the road, they will be incredibly safe. We take that incredibly seriously. It's going to be probably a slow process, but we will start in, as I said before, very controlled circumstances like the Nissan plant and in test tracks like the one in London, and then slowly ramp up to full capability. So I think they're not going to be there tomorrow. They're not going to be suddenly delivering all these deliveries to everybody tomorrow. It's part of a process and also part of a learning experience, for everybody. Some people have said to me, won't there be mobile chicanes? Well, as I said, you may not be driving to the shops anymore if the vehicle does all your deliveries for you. So I think it's coming, but it's not going to be as fast as everybody thinks.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're growing rapidly. Tell us a little bit more about the expansion. What markets are you targeting next? And where do you think the next most viable growth is for Street Drone?
So we're actually starting to find, we went to a government organized event called Cenex LCV a couple of weeks ago, where we displayed our truck and our teleoperation capability with some of our partners at Sunderland. So what we think is that in the nearer term, that let's say that you could have one person looking after maybe 10 trucks. So one person who's got a specialist rig for teleoperating a truck may be able to be in one place, so like a drone pilot, and control 10 vehicles. And maybe the truck in the nearer term does a certain amount of jobs automated, but when the complexity gets too high, it can kind of dial into HQ and say, I'm not sure what to do here. Now that reduces the complexity. It also means that there's a stepping stone from where we are now towards full autonomy. So we got a lot of interest from people like ports and distribution centers and others to say, maybe there's an interim step here and a staged process to go towards full autonomy. And that's where we're getting the most interest at the moment. Anything that's very near term and could happen right now.
Okay, I have a question for you. I wasn't necessarily going to ask this, but I, given your expertise in electric vehicles, can you give me your opinion on electric versus hydrogen vehicles?
Oh, that's a good one. It's funny, we're sponsored by Total in our racing team, and we were chatting about, they're obviously looking at all forms of energy in the future. I think probably the best place to start. So direct electrification, so taking electricity straight from, let's say, solar. So renewables, I think, is key. So let's just assume that's the case. So taking the renewable energy from, say, solar panels and then directly charging an electric vehicle that's battery electric, the efficiency is about 73%. Now, to use hydrogen, proper green hydrogen, it's going to have to be produced by that same renewable energy. The efficiency currently to go to hydrogen from electricity and water is probably three times more energy requirement. So the sort of underlying maths mean that if you've got the possibility of directly electrifying a battery electric vehicle, so mostly in, I would say, cities, which is where most people live in the world, I would say that directly electrifying battery electric vehicles in cities is sort of the top. But there's going to be lots of areas where trucks, planes, ships, long distance vehicles, where the energy density of hydrogen as either a gas, or maybe I see out even further, as a lot of people doing work on ammonia, because ammonia is NH3. So there's three hydrogen atoms and it's easier to store ammonia. It smells and all that kind of stuff, but then so does petrol. So that's another, like, as they say, energy vector. And then the other element is maybe just synthetic fuel, so e-fuels, gasoline that's being created from renewables. But the losses are quite a lot for those fuels. So I didn't answer the question properly, but it's a lot to do with energy, how much energy we have, whether you want it to be green or blue hydrogen, which is obviously taken off the back of other processes. So I think horses for courses. Again, you can see I've been doing a lot of research on this recently. Somewhere like Japan, which has had a problem with nuclear, obviously, recently, in the recent past, is, you know, don't want to do more nuclear plants, although that might be the right solution potentially. So they're looking at some big projects like having solar farms in the in Australia, turning that in the energy into hydrogen, shipping the hydrogen to Japan and turning it back into energy. So maybe that's for something like Japan, that might be the only solution because they haven't got a big landmass. So, but if you're in France, where there's very stable nuclear power, then it's logical they'll stay with nuclear electricity and will probably be biased towards electric vehicles. So I think it's kind of horses for courses. And unlike, I know, the, some of the problems you've had recently in the US, there's a lot of energy sharing going on here in Europe. So, for example, in the morning when France gets up in the morning before us, 1 hour before the UK, we send electricity to France because they're an hour ahead. And then, you know, when we get up and turn on our lights and our coffee machines and everything, then we get energy from France. So there's a lot of sharing. And then if it's windy, there'll probably be energy from the north of the UK. And if it's sunny, it'll come from Portugal, Spain, Italy. So there's a lot of things going on there with energy sharing.
Interesting. Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential in grid upgrades, right? Yes. Globally.
Yes.
Definitely something we'd want to pursue. So can you tell me, are there any particular resources that Street Drone are looking for? Let's say personnel, capital, partners abroad, I don't know, distribution networks, et cetera, that you hope a US or North American listener might reach out to you on after hearing your podcast?
Yeah, I mean, we hope to engage with more universities with our test vehicles, like the Nissan van and the little Twizy. But we're also looking to talk to ports and distribution centers and other people that might find a use for our truck. You'll be able to see that on our website. It's based on a Turberg. It's called a terminal tractor or yard tractor, as they call it here in the UK. Maybe that's the American term, I'm not sure. But some of those products are fairly near term, and if people are interested there. And then we've just done our recent pre-series A round, but we will be looking to talk to more people over the next year to for our next series A round, which we think will probably be sort of nearer towards Christmas next year. But good to get to know people, and we'll probably be at CES. So we'd love to meet people at CES just after Christmas.
Sounds great. Sounds very good. So how can people reach out to learn more about Street Drone? Maybe tell us your social media handles, etc.
Yeah, sure. So it's www.streetdrone.com. I'm just mark@streetdrone.com if you want to get in touch directly. LinkedIn is where we have a lot of information. And then Twitter, you'll use the same handles on Twitter. So you should be able to find out a lot what we're doing there.
Great. That sounds good. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mark, and telling us more about Street Drone. And I'm very excited about the growth of your company, and we'll be watching how it develops globally.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you today.